You're listening to a History Hub podcast. History Hub is based at the School of History at University College Dublin. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify and SoundCloud. For more information and to listen to hundreds of podcasts, go to historyhub.ie. Digital cultures is one of the research themes for the UCD College of Arts and Humanities research strategy for 2020 to 2024. As part of the digital cultures theme of the strategy, Dr. Charles Ivor McGrath from University College Dublin and Dr. Suzanne Forbes from the Open University recently gave an online presentation entitled Our Shared Built Military Heritage, the Online Mapping, Inventorying and Recording of the Army Barracks of Ireland 1690 to 1921. Their presentation took place in January 2024 and focused on their work on the Army Barracks of Ireland project. This project is funded by the North-South Research Programme and co-led by University College Dublin and the Open University. The project team are currently preparing a comprehensive online map of all army barracks operational on the island of Ireland between 1690 and 1921, and it's due for launch in early 2024. You can learn more about the project on barracksireland.wordpress.com. Thanks to support from the UCD College of Arts and Humanities Research Strand in Digital Cultures, we are able to feature their talk in this episode of the podcast. A video of the talk, complete with slides, is also available to watch on the Digital Cultures page on the UCD College of Arts and Humanities website, as well as on History Hub. The talk was introduced by Digital Cultures theme leaders, Dr. Mark Cable from UCD School of History and Professor Linda Mulvan from the UCD School of Art History.
I'd like to introduce my colleague, Dr. Mark Cable, my other colleagues, Dr. Charles Ivor McGrath from University College Dublin and Dr. Suzanne Forbes from the Open University. We're gathered together here, we're between Mark and myself, we're hosting this webinar today, which comes under the umbrella of the UCD Digital Cultures Research Strand. The research strand itself is part of a number of, directions or threads or strands within UCD College of Arts and Humanities, which is set up to examine or to look at interdisciplinary approaches to the arts and humanities in the field of digital culture. We are considering how to shape, to record elements and aspects of looking at our digital past, looking at the present, the current situations. This is such a fast changing, the pace of change is also something to bear in mind in terms of the digital humanities and digital cultural field. Some major themes we have been addressing. We have seminars, talks, lectures, roundtables. We've had a number of thematic groups and gatherings within within the college over the past, 24 months at least. And we've been exploring different themes within that overarching digital cultures forum and notions to deal with, presenting the history of the book, looking at diseases, contagion, biopolitics of that, thinking about cultural memory, thinking about the storage of big data, for example, the methodologies within this whole realm of digital cultures itself and what's moving, what's changing, who's working within our field. So in many respects, we're a network and we're a growing network relating to digital culture and in many respects to thinking of within taking this from a college level into the classroom. Numbers of colleagues are working using digital storytelling or looking at object biographies and how to work within this realm and using the online media in a very proactive way. So heritage and culture coming together. So in many respects, right across the histories of digital cultural history is something that we're very concerned with. And not least today, we're very pleased to introduce, and I'm going to hand you over to Mark Cable just now, where we're looking at military heritage and the building of these ideas digitally and online. And with that, Mark, I'm going to hand on to you.
Thanks very much, Linda, for that introduction to the College Strand and Digital Cultures. So moving on, without further ado, I'm very pleased to introduce our two speakers today. My colleague, Ivor McGrath, is an associate professor at UCD School of History, published very widely on 18th century Irish history. He's an expert on the penal laws. More recently, he's published a book on Lansdowne Football Club, A History, which is not obviously located in the 18th century. It's more recent. And previously, Ireland and Empire, 1692-1770. Suzanne Forbes, whom I know from our collective days, I think, in the Humanities Institute back in the day, is a senior lecturer in history at the Open University, and her monograph, Print and Party Politics in Ireland, 1689-1714, has been a hugely innovative contribution to the field of print and the history of the book in early 18th century Ireland, late 17th century Ireland. Both are co-leaders, co-investigators, a bit like myself and Linda, we're co-conspirators, for the project Army Barracks of Ireland, our shared built military heritage, 1690-1921, and that's funded by the North-South Research Programme. So I'll hand over to you, Ivor. Thank you very much.
That's great. Thanks, Mark and Linda. And good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Delighted to be invited along. My role today is to explain a little about our HEA North-South Research Programme project, our shared built military heritage, the online mapping, inventorying and recording of the Army Barracks of Ireland, 1690-1921, in general terms, before handing over to Suzanne, who would take you on a more focused journey around the barracks and the project's digital aims and outcomes. The Our Shared Built Military Heritage Project is a collaboration between UCD and the Open University in Belfast, and as Mark and Linda said, is funded by the Higher Education Authority North-South Research Programme as part of the Government of Ireland's Shared Island Initiative. It is an 18-month project which started in September 2022, so we are almost finished now and thankfully still on schedule. Our aim was to identify and map online all permanent residential army barracks that operated in Ireland from the 1690s through to the end of a British military presence in the 26 counties of the Irish Free State in 1921-2. And as we speak, that online map is in the final stages of production and will be officially launched at the end of February in both Dublin and Belfast. So, what are residential army barracks and why do they matter? Despite the danger of stating the very obvious, barracks are buildings which house soldiers. Here are a couple of images of Richmond Barracks in Dublin, a location I will come back to at the end of the talk. Although the purpose is simple, barracks have not always existed. Prior to the late 17th century, many countries, including Britain and Ireland, did not have permanent professional standing armies. Instead, local lords of the crown would muster temporary troops when and as needed. These troops would live in camps, huts, if they were lucky, or just basic tents, or might be billeted upon the general populace in private homes or taverns and inns, often to the detriment of all involved. The taking of free quarter, not paying for bed and board, drunkenness, debauchery, and destruction of property were all regular complaints. The main difference between these temporary arrangements of camps and billets and that of barracks is that barracks are of a more permanent nature and are under the direct control of the military or state. The building of a countrywide network of barracks in late 17th and early 18th century Ireland constituted a dramatic shift in the history of the English presence in Ireland. The current image is from our original pilot project for the online mapping of 18th century barracks, which we carried out in 2014-2015. Why was this countrywide network of barracks built in the first place? The years 1689-1697 had witnessed a major continental war, the War of the Grand Alliance, fought by England and her allies against Louis XIV's France. The start of that war had seen the Catholic James II of England, Scotland and Ireland ousted from those three kingdoms by his son-in-law and nephew, William of Orange, who led the Grand Alliance thereafter. But following the war's end in 1697, the English Parliament refused to maintain William's large army in peacetime for fear it would become the tool of a future tyrant. So instead, 12,000 of those soldiers were rerouted to Ireland for billeting. In Ireland, the minority Irish Protestant ruling elite, still fearful of the Irish Catholic majority following the Williamite Jacobite War of 1689 to 91, and in the face of the ongoing international threat from Catholic France, readily accepted such a massively increased military presence in Ireland. But recognizing that the traditional methods of billeting soldiers in taverns and private homes could no longer suffice when such large numbers of soldiers were permanently stationed in the country, the Holy Protestant Irish Parliament decided to vote funds for building a residential complex to house these soldiers, in other words, barracks. Construction commenced straight away in 1698-9 with a new bureaucracy of barrack masters, a barrack board and barrack trustees put in place alongside published rules, orders, powers and directions for the good government and preservation of the barracks. Our HEA North-South project therefore seeks to record, preserve, understand and enlighten with regard to this unique military innovation, which had been initiated in a few short years in Ireland at a time when such innovation was still in its infancy in European terms. Ireland served as the exemplar in that regard. The equivalent did not occur in England until the end of the 18th century, and even then borrowed heavily from the Irish experience. The current images are the grandest of the first iteration of barracks, that built in Dublin in the first decade of the 18th century, known in time as the Royal Barracks and later as Collins Barracks. It was not superseded in size or grandeur until 1853 with the building of the army complex at Aldershot in England. These Irish barracks were primarily residential rather than fortified buildings and allowed a military presence to be retained throughout the country for security, policing and tax gathering purposes. As such, they presaged a new approach to army billeting, which was to become a more integral and at times troubled part of the British imperial enterprise in the 18th and 19th centuries. Despite their central place physically, historically and culturally within Ireland, the political, cultural, economic and social impact of barracks and the extent to which they constituted both a symbol of and an institution of the state and the British presence in Ireland remains to be fully researched and understood. The project therefore looks to facilitate a greater understanding of these impacts. For example, many streets and other locations were permanently renamed to reflect the presence of a barracks, and these buildings, once no longer in use by the army, came to be reused for many other purposes, such as schools, hospitals, and private dwellings over time. Indeed, while some barracks buildings have disappeared completely, others remain in use for a variety of different purposes, including as heritage institutions. This is once again the Royal or Collins Barracks, now the National Museum of Ireland. But more on that later on. The different ways in which these sites have been neglected or preserved over time have a lot to tell us about our shared military heritage. To that end, our project looked to ensure that consistent data was gathered on all army barracks constructed in Ireland from the 1690s through to the end of a British military presence in the 26 counties of the Irish Free State in 1921-2. And we have done so by creating an online map of all these barracks, along with additional information and data, including a website and four pilot heritage trails. For more on all of this, I now hand over to my colleague, Suzanne.
Thanks, Ivor. So as Ivor has said, our primary concern is to identify and map those military complexes that were built to provide permanent residential facilities for regular army soldiers on the island of Ireland. So we've been busy creating a data set of these sites. By permanent residential facilities, we mean sites that were established with the intention of serving as barracks for the foreseeable future. In some cases, that turned out to be decades, and in others, it was only a few years. But if we've reason to believe a barracks was established with a view to being permanent, we've included it in our data set. We have excluded the many temporary barracks put into use at times of war or other security crises, including private buildings converted to military use for a very short period of time. The definition all permanent residential army barracks probably excludes quite a few other places that some people might expect us to include. For example, police or RIC barracks are obviously not army barracks, so we wouldn't normally include them in our data set. However, in some cases, former army barracks were later used as police barracks, and those sites are included. Some permanent barracks were purpose-built, but others were fitted out in buildings that originally had a different purpose. This includes many sites like forts, castles, and other defensive structures. For example, some Martello Terrors, such as Finisker Terror on the River Shannon in County Offaly, were recorded by the Irish military establishment as permanent barracks and are therefore included in our data set, but other Martello Terrors are not. Some older forts and castles, such as Elizabeth Fort in Cork or Ross Castle in Kerry, were repurposed as barracks. But obviously, if we don't have evidence of a fort, castle or other defensive structure being used as a barracks, we have not included it in our data set. So that's a bit about what we're looking at and, importantly, what we're not looking at. And I'll talk a bit now about the sources we've used to identify the army barracks. So far, at this stage, we've used 19 primary source lists of army barracks, and they provide the foundation of our data set. They all look similar enough to those shown on screen here. Our earliest list is from 1704 and provides details of Queen Anne's Irish Army establishment. And the latest list we have so far is from 1922. We have pretty good coverage of the 18th century up to the 1870s with these lists. But after that, we've had trouble locating sources of a similar kind. Now, we've made up for this to an extent by identifying references to barracks recorded in the UK National Archives catalogue for the late 19th and early 20th century. And we do have some early 20th century lists to cross-reference against. So we can be fairly confident we've picked up most, if not all, barracks for the period we're dealing with. All of the lists that we've used can be regarded as coming from official or government sources. While we have some manuscript lists, most are printed. For example, many of the lists that we've used for the 19th century come from the House of Commons parliamentary papers, as you can see on the right here. It's worth pointing out that by and large, the lists that we've used do not provide consistent information across the entire period of time that we're dealing with, as they've been compiled for a range of different purposes. For example, the list on the left here from 1716 is concerned with barrack master salaries, but other lists are concerned with other topics like sanitary conditions of the barracks or the capacity of different barracks and so on. The most consistent piece of information that we have across all of these lists is the name of the barracks itself. And I suppose our first step was to transcribe that information from each list. You may be able to make out from the slides here. You may not be able to make it out, but I don't know, if your eyesight is good, you may be able to make out from the slide here. The vast majority of barracks on these lists don't have unique names, but are known instead by the name of the place in which they are located. So looking at the list on the right there, you might be able to make out some place names such as Arglass, Arklow, Athlone, Armagh, and so on. But of course, place names change over time and we're dealing with historic sources, so their spelling can vary a lot from list to list. So to fully identify each barracks and to make sure we could relate one list to another, we had to look very carefully at the name of each barracks on a list and then standardize the spelling. And to do that, for the most part, we've assigned it a modern place name spelling. There's a click there, Ivor. Yeah, thanks. To give you a sense of what we're dealing with in some cases, here's a list of alternative names and spellings for a few different barracks. So you can see, for some of them, Portlaoise obviously was called Maryborough, but some are less obvious. You can see the many different variations of spellings for Garrett Devlin. So across different lists that we've used. And some you would never even guess at, like Four Mile House is also Jonesborough. It's also referred to as Newry Mountains and, you know, different spellings along the way. Shanrow, another tricky one, also known as Fork Hill or Belmont. So standardising the names of barracks across these different lists was quite a job in itself. Once we were somewhat confident we had matched the right place name to a listed barracks and related all the lists to one another. We passed this information on to our research assistants, who worked through each barracks in more detail, consulting a much wider variety of sources in order to gather background, a little bit of background information about each site and to try and locate each site. So while we have been able to identify the exact location of many barracks, some have proven elusive, particularly earlier short-lived sites that no longer survive. In most of those cases, we have enough evidence to narrow the location down to, say, a street, or, you know, kind of, we're reasonably confident our map pin is close to where the barracks was. But in a small number of, relatively small number of cases, we can't pinpoint a site with any real certainty. So for this reason, our data set includes coordinates for each site, as well as an indication as to whether we think those coordinates are exact, close to where the barracks was located, or just marking the general area in which the barracks was probably located. Another click there, please. Thank you. It has been important to work through each barracks on a case-by-case basis, as it has thrown up, doing so has thrown up other issues with the official lists that we've used as sources. For example, in many cases, there would be a single entry on the lists indicating the presence of a barracks in a large town or city, such as Londonderry, for example. But when you delve into things a bit deeper and start to look at other sources, you realise that multiple barracks might have operated in that town at the same time, and one barracks might have replaced another over time. And it's impossible to distinguish these different barracks from one another without consulting a wider range of sources. So for Derry / Londonderry, also described on the lists sometimes as Derry and sometimes as Londonderry, actually had, how many do we have? Six different sites. And we just couldn't tell that without looking at various secondary sources and primary sources. We couldn't tell that from our source lists. So while the official lists of barracks that we've used as the foundation for the data set have been a really good starting point, they have not been sufficient to identify or to map all barracks that operated during the period. Looking into each barracks, checking locations, identifying sites that aren't apparent on the list has been essential for ensuring the accuracy of the data set. At this point, we think, we hope, we pray that we have a nearly exhaustive data set of barrack sites, but no doubt making the information accessible to the public in the near future will help us to identify anything that we've missed or mixed up. So that was already a brief explanation of some of the issues or challenges we dealt with when compiling our data set of permanent residential army barracks. I'll talk a little bit now about what kind of insights it can provide, or at least what we're beginning to take away from this information. But we've a lot more work to do in terms of analysing that information and understanding what it tells us. At this point, we're at the end of the data collection phase of the project, and for the whole island, we have a record of 368 barracks across the period of time that we're dealing with. We had estimated the number would be more than 400 sites at the outset of the project, so we weren't too far off. This may change slightly in the next few weeks, but it's pretty accurate at this stage. We have about 368 sites. And you can begin to get a sense from this chart here as to what proportion of barracks were in each province. So Munster appears to have had the greatest proportion of barracks, with roughly 32% of all historic barracks in our data set located there. After that, Ulster had about 29%, Leinster 26%, and Connacht 13%. Of those sites, we're confident that we found an exact location match for over half of the sites in Ulster, over 70% of the sites in Connacht, over 84% of the sites in Leinster, and 68% in Munster. Now, some sites are harder to locate than others for various reasons, and in some cases, there's no remains of barracks at all whatsoever, maybe because they've been demolished or replaced with other buildings. and we haven't been able to identify where they were located on historic maps so far, at least. We also have a batch of troublesome barracks that we can't find much information about. And these all operated for a relatively short time in and around the 1820s. We thought they might be temporary barracks, and we could therefore exclude them from our data set. But these sites all appear on one particular list from 1822, which explicitly says that they are not temporary barracks. So we had to include them. There's a far greater proportion of these troublesome sites in Ulster, which largely accounts for the lower rate of exact location matches in that province. Go on to the next one there. Yeah, so you can see here 23% of sites we've located in Ulster are from that 1822 list. So they were probably quite short-lived barracks sites. Establishing the dates that each barracks operated has proven challenging. Looking at each site on a case-by-case basis has been the best way to establish dates of operation, but even then it's not without issue, and it's something we're still working on. So our underlying data here is far from perfect, but in this chart you get something of a sense of the numbers of barracks established each decade on a national level across the period of time that we're dealing with. I think, go back when they arrive, I think I got a bit overexcited writing click into my script. So you can see a significant increase in the numbers of new barracks in the early 18th century. And moving ahead in time, the numbers of barracks being established rises noticeably in the 1780s and 1790s, with substantial numbers of barracks established in the 1810s and 1820s. And looking at the breakdown of the same information by province, which is the next slide. Thanks. Again, you can see the two main waves of barracks construction in the early 18th century and again in the 1780s, 90s into the first decades of the 19th century. During this second wave here, you can see different areas seem to have been a priority at different times. First Ulster in 1780s and 90s. Then Leinster, 1790s, 1800s, then Munster and Ulster are the focus in the 1810s and 1820s. We've also been tracking the original purpose of barrack sites. Again, still a work in progress, but we've identified the original purpose of about two-thirds of the barracks in our data set at this stage. As you can see from this chart, the majority of barracks were purpose-built. After that, a significant number were located at the site of or fitted out in existing fortifications, old castles, defensive sites, bonds, and so on. The other category includes private dwellings or commercial premises which were fitted out as barracks. State-owned buildings are next, and this category includes buildings that were used as jails, asylums, courthouses, workhouses, and so on. There are also a small number of barracks located at the site of or in buildings originally constructed by religious groups for various purposes, for example, convents, abbeys, or bishops' palaces. We also decided to track the current status of these sites. Again, a work in progress, but as you can see from the slide here, we have not been able to establish the status of approximately one third of sites, which will include all those sites we don't have an exact location for. We've established that just over a quarter of sites in our data set are no longer extant, and just short of half of the entire data set, so 48% of barrack sites we've identified, are extant or partially extant. So that's 176 extant or partially extant historic barrack sites across the island. Of the sites that do survive, some are ruined or disused and derelict, but many have been repurposed as housing, commercial premises, heritage sites, and public amenities. The different ways in which these sites have been neglected or preserved over time, we think, has a lot to tell us about attitudes to the historic barracks network. So it's something we hope to explore further. Indeed, we see this research into the historic barracks network establishing, I suppose, what is very basic information, such as where these sites are and how many of them there are, how many survive and what they're being used for now, as an essential starting point for understanding both the history and ongoing impact of these important built heritage sites. So one of our aims with this project is to share our research with as wide an audience as possible. We're using the research data set to develop a public-facing online map, which will be available on Google Maps. The main reason for using Google Maps is that we were keen to avoid developing a bespoke app, which would require maintenance into the future. We can talk more about that maybe in the Q&A. We've also been working on developing some heritage trails of interest, particularly interesting or well-preserved barrack sites. And we'll be launching all of these outputs, as Ivor mentioned, at two launch events in late February, to which you're all most welcome to come. The Dublin event will be on 27th of February, and we need to confirm the venue, and we will send around invitations soon. And a launch event will also happen in Belfast in the Ulster Museum on the 29th of February. So if you're interested in those events or the project generally, take a look at the project website. And yes, with that in mind, I'll hand back over to Ivor now, who'll offer some thoughts on the significance and ongoing impact of the Historic Barracks Network by way of conclusion.
Thanks, Suzanne. As I alluded to at the outset, one of the focuses of the project is on the use and reuse of army barracks. There are a range of excellent examples across the country of how these ex-military complexes can be repurposed for our 21st century society in ways that are advantageous to individuals, families, local communities, and to wider society, and that are cognizant of the challenges of sustainability, environmental impact, and long-term value for money. Often, the quick fix, knee-jerk reaction is to dismiss them as too expensive to refurbish or remodel and reuse, while historical association with Britain's imperial past leads some to advocate for their demolition and destruction. Yet creative thinking can make for wonderful reimaginations and reuse of these buildings. Which brings me back to Richmond Barracks. During COVID, I went there for one of my booster shots. It was a great example of how recycling these buildings can benefit the community in ways money cannot buy. The military handed Richmond Barracks over to Dublin Corporation in 1924, and parts of it were then converted into social housing in what became known as Keogh Square. In 1929, three of the buildings were purchased by the Christian Brothers in order to establish St. Michael's School. In the 1960s, the Keogh Square housing was demolished and replaced with St. Michael's Estate, which in turn was demolished in 2013. However, the barrack buildings of the Christian Brothers School, which had closed in 2006, were thereafter refurbished along with the original barracks gymnasium as a community centre and events venue in 2016 as part of the commemorative programme for the Easter Rising. And last October, myself and Suzanne gave a talk there as part of the Dublin Festival of History. Other barracks have been repurposed for the greater good as well. Some examples include Collins Barracks, which remained in military use till 1997. After various debates about its future, it was thankfully repurposed as the National Museum of Ireland and is now such a wonderful facility in the heart of Dublin by the river and on the Lewis Line, and which attracts tourists and members of the public from far and wide. A different but also positive reuse occurred for Beggars Bush Barracks, which after functioning as the location for the Gaeltacht Industries Depot, established in 1930 with a remit to market the output of Gaeltacht Rural Industries, it went on to provide a home for the Labour's Relation Commission and Court and the Geological Society of Ireland. Currently, the old Garrison Chapel is the location of the National Print Museum, while the Irish Labour History Society Museum is based in the former Central Garrison headquarters on the Front Square, which is the image we're looking at the moment. It is also the case that much of the remaining pre-existing structures have also been repurposed as housing, with the redevelopment of the main square in the early 1990s into residential apartments being tastefully carried out with respect to the original structures and fabrics of the buildings. Another brilliant repurposing occurred with Wellington or Griffith Barracks, which is now, of course, Griffith College, a third level education institution. And although much of the original fabric of Island Bridge or Clancy Barracks is gone, the apartment complex built on the site does still incorporate buildings from the old barracks, In particular, the image we see here, the renovated Victorian Cavalry Officers' Mess, formerly the Ordnance Corps HQ House. And north of the border, an enlightened reimagining of a greatly contested space can be seen in Derry, with the former Ebrington Barracks, which functions as a public space and community hub for all. Now, I know all of this, apart from that, is a bit Dublin-centric, but there are other great examples of reuse, such as King's House in Boyle, in the Butler Gallery in Kilkenny, and in plans for places such as Castlebar and Ballina. There are other examples as well, which I'm not going to go into now. But there are also many examples of those that are still in need of repair, restoration, and reimaginative reuse. The wonderfully located and fascinating complex on screen at the moment is the Magazine Fort in the Phoenix Park. There's been plans in place for quite a while now, but this has fallen victim to various postponements, yet it could be such a wonderful tourist attraction as well as cultural and community hub, and has unique examples of three extant 18th century barrel vaulted gunpowder magazines, which we discovered last October when we were giving a talk in Richmond, have been used in the past because the acoustics apparently are brilliant, apart from the fact that they were made control explosions of gunpowder and so on. But apparently the acoustics within those are brilliant. But again, they're lying unused for the last decade or so. Less evident are plans for what to do with a more recently decommissioned barracks in Longford, Connolly Barracks, which the County Council took ownership of in 2012. Plans to sell it into private hands provoked a local campaign for it to be repurposed for public use, though its long-term future still remains uncertain. And I should say, we should have credited Mark Cable here for taking that photograph of Longford Barracks. But it's also of notice, if you look at Longford Barracks, that image that's on screen at the moment, and the design of it, the shape of it, and what to me I think is a beautiful, if functional, building. What can happen very quickly over time if these buildings are not taken care of, not looked after, and left derelict? You only have to look at Nina. Very same type of structure and design. The danger of not acting soon is evident when we look at this. It's in a state of terrible dereliction owing to neglect. It's a great location within the town, and a wonderful local community group have been actively lobbying the municipal council and local politicians to act with certainty and authority in saving it and making it a vibrant focal point for the town and the wider community with a museum and other amenities. And you can follow this group and support their endeavours on Facebook as the Nina Military History Group. As this last case demonstrates, there's still so much untapped potential across the island in the recycling and reuse of these old army barracks. Hopefully, our project and the online map, the heritage trails and the inventory will help communities and others to realise their potential. So thank you to listen to both of us here today.
Thanks for listening to this History Hub podcast. History Hub is based at the School of History at University College Dublin. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify and SoundCloud. For more information and to listen to hundreds of podcasts, go to historyhub.ie.